Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
We're going to be doing Genesis 20 and 21 today. Again, it's amazing that Abraham is such a mixture of such great faith and such horrendous doubt. I guess that's the way all of us are. Abraham has just received a tremendous promise from God in 17. Sarah in chapter 18. The judgment of Sodom and Gomorrah in 19. And in chapter 20, Abraham again says his wife is his sister. The exact same thing God had to rescue him from back in chapter 12 with Pharaoh. Now he's doing it again to the Philistine king Abimelech. It's amazing. But it shows the theological truth that right on the brink of the fulfillment of the promise of God, man almost fumbled the ball. And what it's saying is, God won't let us fumble. Oh, hallelujah, what a tremendous promise that God is the one who's going to bring about salvation. I love Philippians 2, 12 and 13, that it's God that worketh in us to will and to do His good pleasure. He's going to cause us to desire it. Hallelujah. Now, verse 1. Now, Abram journeyed from there. Where is the there? Well, it's, of course, the Oaks of Mamre, which we would say was very close to Hebron, okay, back in the chapter 18. To the land of the Negev. Now, the Negev is mentioned back in chapter 13:1. Negev means the south country. It's kind of a semi-arid desert below Beersheba. Abraham and Isaac wandered in the southern regions of the promised land for the most part. Jacob will get a little more in the middle and to the north. And settled between Kadesh and Sur. Now, Kadesh, of course, is Kadesh Barnea. It's mentioned back in chapter 14:7. It's a very large oasis. The word Kadesh comes from the word holy, Kadosh. And so it was a sacred site, probably because the water was there. And Sur, well, that's anyway, that's back in chapter 16:7. That's where Hagar had fled, where the angel of the Lord talked to her. We don't know exactly where it is, but it's south of Beersheba on the way to Egypt. Then he journeyed to Gir. Now, if you look at your map, you say, well, he made kind of a funny trick. Well, the problem is this is a two-stage trip. He had to continually move because of his flocks and herds and pasture land. Now, these patriarchs were not camel nomadics like the Arabian Bedouin today, but they were kind of semi-nomadic. They had some crops, but they still moved some and lived in tents. So he's moved twice. So he moved a little bit more north, a little bit more toward the Shipla, or the coastal plain, where we know the Philistines settled. Now, this Gir is mentioned back in 10:19 as being towards Gaza, one of the five later cities of the Philistines. Now, and Abraham said to Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. Now, you almost got to go over and pick up verse 13 to see this. This is something Abraham and Sarah agreed on very early when God called them out of Ur of the Chaldees. And he never learned how inappropriate it was. Matter of fact, it's so inappropriate that it passed on to his son Isaac. And Isaac, in chapter 26, does the very same thing. Jacob does it twice, 12 and 20, and Isaac does it in 26. I guess maybe that's one of the sins that we pass on our sins to our children. There's a good example of it right there. Or it's some kind of cultural thing we don't understand. And I want to say a word here. It was a half-truth that we learned. We learned that from back in verse 11, where he starts to explain. They had the same father, but different mothers. Now, we learned from the Newsy tablets that sometimes a husband would adopt his wife as a way of saying that they were really one family. And so the Newsy tablets give us a possibility, but verse 12 says they had the same dad but different fathers. So Terah was both their dads but different mothers. How that works out, we just don't know. So Abimelech, now the word Abimelech means, it's kind of like the word Pharaoh, the word Caesar, the word Czar. It refers to all their rulers. We probably see that with the same man, the same name, and his commander of his army, which may also be a name for the commander, is mentioned later on in Isaac in chapter 26. Now, Abimelech probably means my father is king, or the king, God, is my father. And we're not sure which. You might want to see this same name that's used in the introduction to Psalms 34, where you see it's this general name like Pharaoh. Sent and took Sarah. Now, the question is, why did he take Sarah? The old girl is pretty old. I think she's around 90. Some say, well, when God energized her to have a child, she became radiant again. Well, that's always a possibility. Her looks were quite striking, we learned, back in chapter 12, verse 14. Maybe he took her because she was still a very attractive woman. But she called herself all wrinkled up back in chapter 18, so I don't know if that's it. Maybe it was the idea of sealing the fellowship and friendship between Abraham and Abimelech. Since Abraham didn't tell him anything, that may be a possibility, but it's a strange occurrence anyway. And God came to Abimelech in a dream, exactly how he did to Laban to protect Jacob in chapter 31:24. God often spoke to these non-covenant people in dreams. Now, I want to tell you, Abimelech comes across in this chapter as much more believing, much more righteous than Abraham. Behold, you are a dead man because the woman you have taken, she is married. Now, we see through here a moral sensitivity on the part of Abimelech. This kind of tells us that there was that the time of the degradation of this people had not come yet. Maybe that's why God said that the sin of the Amorites not yet full. They hadn't all fallen. We see the righteousness of Melchizedek earlier in Abraham's life. We see the righteousness of Abimelech here. And Abimelech had not come near to her. The rabbis say the angel of the Lord kept him. But the text seems to imply that he got a disease. Look over there in verse 6. God said, yeah, I'm the one that made you not come near to her. Here's God's daily activity in our life. Now, there seems to be a disease involved. We get that in verses 17 and 18. Some kind of disease where he could not perform sexually and the women could not bear children. Now, exactly what all is involved, I don't think we can get from the text. But God prevented him from doing anything to Sarah. Now, why? Because Sarah's around the verge of having the promised child. Now, wouldn't it be the pits if they could later say, well, it isn't Abraham, it's Abimelech. It's a Philistine king that's the real son of father of Isaac. No, God made sure no one could doubt what was happening. Now Abimelech had not come near to her, and he said, Lord, wilt thou slay a nation, even though blameless? Now this wilt thou slay a nation, again, is the idea of corporality. You see at the end of verse 7, you and all who are yours. This same sense of corporality, a man affects his family and affects all those who work for him or are servants of him, is found in chapter 17:27 and 19:12. You see it with Lot. You see it earlier with Abraham about the circumcision, and all of his family were circumcised. This same kind of discussion about justice is found back in chapter 18:23. As Abraham believed God was just, Abimelech believed God was just. So Abimelech some way knows about God. The reason I say that, he's going to use the covenant name for God, Yahweh. What verse does he do that? Calls him calls him Adonai, or Lord. Yeah, in verse 4. So here we see that Abimelech knew something about God, as Melchizedek, who was not in the promised line, knew God intimately. Now, notice it says, he's going to say, now, he claimed to be a brother, and she claimed to be a sister. And he explains all that, and he says, God, you know the integrity of my heart, that my hands. Now, the word hand here is an idiom for the open hand, that he's not hiding anything. And God said, yes, I do know that's true, and I kept you from sinning. Look at verse 7. Now, therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet. Now, the prophet, we think, Nabib, means to bubble up, and therefore to speak upon divine revelation. This idea, well, how is Abraham a prophet? Well, some say it's because of the intercessory prayer he's going to make for Abimelech down in verses 17 and 18. And that's possible. I want to give you the number of places in the Bible. It says that a prophet prayed for people, so intercessory prayer is certainly an aspect of the prophet. 1 Samuel 7, verse 5, 1 Samuel 12, verses 14 and 23. Job 42:8, Jeremiah 7:16, Jeremiah 11:14, Jeremiah 14:11, Jeremiah 27:18, or some of the places. Others say it's concerning the revelation about him, about the children that he was going to pass on to his children, found in chapter 18:19. I'm not sure which it is. And he will pray for you, and you will live. That's what happens in verse 17. Now look at verse 8. Abimelech tells all his servants, who apparently been struck with the same disease he was, and you and all who are yours, and, excuse me, I lost my place. Okay. And the men were greatly frightened. Now, here we show the religious sensitivity, not only of Abimelech, but of his servants and household. So Abimelech rose early in the morning and called his servants and told all these things, and the men were greatly frightened. And then Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, three questions are recorded in verses 9 and 10 that, much like Pharaoh, really chide Abraham for his lack of honesty. First, number one, what have you done to us? What do you mean? The plague fell on them. And how have we sinned against you that you have brought on me and my kinsmen a great sin? You've caused me to sin morally, and God's took it out on me. Have you done to me things that ought not to be done? Look at verse 10. Abimelech said to Abraham, what have you encountered that you have done this thing? Now, the word encountered could mean, what have you seen in the future, prophet? Or, what most of the modern scholars say, it's the idea of, what has happened to you in the past that has caused you to do this? And that seems to be the thrust here. Look at verse 11. Abraham said, because I thought surely there is no fear of God in this place. Well, verses 4 through 6 with Abimelech and verse 8 with his servants show that Abraham was wrong in that. Because they will kill me because of my wife, apparently because of her beauty. That was his fear in chapter 12, verse 12. That's Isaac's fear because of the beauty of Rebekah in chapter 26, 7. These patriarchs married some flasheries. Flashers, I want you to know. Real foxes. Verse 12. Besides, she actually is my sister, the daughter of my father, Terah. They had different mothers. Now, verse 13. And it came about when God caused me to wander. Now, I want to say two things here. He's almost blaming God for him wandering, kind of like Adam saying, I did this because I have to wander around from place to place. But that may be just our English implication, not meant here in the Hebrew. Now, the cause me to wander is a plural verb with the name for God here, Elohim, and it's usually singular. But the rabbis say it's plural in other places, and they give example, chapter 1, verse 26, chapter 11, verse 7, chapter 35, verse 7, and 2 Samuel 7, 23, which shows it's not always a singular verb. But I don't think we can read too much of polytheism in here and that kind of thing. If anything, it's an incipient form of the Trinity. Some say he used a plural here because Abimelech was a polytheist and he was trying to condescend to his level. Condescend nothing. Abraham better get up on Abimelech's level at this point. Abimelech comes across as the righteous one here. Now, in verse 13, it shows that Abraham and Sarah decided early to make this deal wherever they got in trouble, and he did it twice. Abimelech took 7 sheep and oxen, male and female servants, and gave them to Abraham. It's going to be a real question among commentators. Are there 2 gifts given, one in verse 14 to Abraham and one in verse 16 to Sarah? Or is the one in verse 16 really the monetary price of the gift that's given to Abraham and therefore only one gift? Now, if there's one gift, then Abraham is going to be Sarah's protection down in verse 16. But I really think there's 2 gifts. One to Abraham, and notice it calls him your brother in verse 16. That's kind of a slap in the face. Maybe it's connected somehow with a diary. We're not sure about that. I want to see Exodus 22:16, or the compensation to a relative for hurting someone. Something may be caught up in that. I'm just not sure. Now look in verse 16. Your vindication. Now, what does that mean? Well, literally, it means for your covering of the eyes. Now, apparently, the servants in Abraham's house were going to look at Sarah kind of funny because she'd been taken to a harem. So Abimelech says, I'm going to give Abraham a lot of herds and cattle and kind of a compensation. Sarah, I'm going to give you a 1,000 something of silver, maybe shekels, we're just not sure, weight, a very large amount. So they'll know that nothing happened to you, that your credibility can be restored. And that's where the last part of this verse, before all men you are cleared, is translated. Now, King James has reproved, but that doesn't seem to be the thought here at all. Both the commentators, Delitzsch, Kyle, Lang, and Leupold, all say it means respects that you are justified. And this is the way that the American Standard Version, the Jewish Publication Society of America, the Moffat Translation, and the Revised Standard Version translate this. This is an excellent book. It's called The Bible in 26 Translations. It's just recently available in the Old Testament. It'll help very much on English-speaking readers comparing the different translations. It takes a pool of 26 translations and gives King James a base and then shows how the others deviate. It's a very, very helpful book. You might want to purchase that. Now, notice if you would, where in verse 17, Abraham healed Abimelech. Notice here also in verse 17, you see that a barrenness was a sense of divine curse. That's why Abraham and Sarah couldn't understand how God said such wonderful things to them in promises, but Sarah was still barren. And you see a little sidelight of that in verse 17 and 18, of course. It's amazing how they knew so quickly that God had closed their womb. How much time here, I'm not sure, elapsed, but probably the sickness itself showed that. Now in chapter 21, which really begins another section, but we are covering them both today because the lesson does. Then the Lord took note of Sarah. Literally here it means he visited her. Now it's kind of like the term in the New Testament, the day of God's visitation. It means the day when God draws near. It can mean for judgment or for blessing. There are several places where it's used for blessing. You might see Genesis 50:24 and 25 and Exodus 13:19 are two places it's used for a blessing, though the truth is quite often it's used for God's judgment. As he said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. Well, now, specifically, the promise came to Sarah back in chapter 18, verses 10 through 15. But it's been implied in every promise God gave to Abraham in chapter 12, chapter 15, chapter 17. But it's specifically to Sarah in chapter 18. Now, so Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age at the appointed time of which God had spoken to him. Now, God spoke specifically about this appointed time to Abraham in chapter 17, 21, and specifically to Sarah in chapter 18, verses 10 and 14. I think it refers to the 9-month pregnancy period, but others say a whole different year. Now, Abraham called the name of his son, going to call him Isaac. Now, that's what God told him to call him back in chapter 17, verses 9 through 14. This word is related to Sarah's laughter in chapter 18, 15. Remember, Sarah, first Abraham laughed in chapter 17, 17. Then Sarah's going to laugh in chapter 18, 15. And God said, why did you laugh, Sarah? Now, God's going to take the reproach of Sarah's laughter away by naming the child Laughter. It's kind of a pun. And so I think it's interesting there. Okay? Abraham circumcised his son Isaac. That's what God told him to do in chapter 17, verses 9 through 14. He's called Isaac in chapter 17, 19 and 21. Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born, showing that it's all of God and not of man. And that's why God had let all these problems come in this age and the impossibility and the capture by these different men and all that showed the covenant was from God and not from man. Now, notice if you would where it says, the child's going to grow up, going to be weaned. Now, we're not sure exactly how old that is. In verse 7, it says, Sarah would nurse children. The plural is here. I get tickled at the rabbis. They say at the weaning ceremony, which was culturally common in that day, usually about 2 to 3 years old, that princes came. And they said, oh, Sarah didn't really have this child. Others had it and just gave it to Sarah to raise. And Sarah says, I'll show you. I'll suckle all your children that you brought. And so the rabbis say, Sarah suckled all their children to show how much milk she had to prove she really was the mother. That's interesting, I think. Now, this great feast, look at verse 9. Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had bore to Abraham, mocking. Now, the word here literally means playing. It's related to the word for laughter, the name for Isaac. Now, in the New Testament, Galatians 4:29, obviously this verse refers to the persecution that Paul says that Ishmael did to Isaac. Ishmael must have been between 15 and 17, okay? You might want to see this same root used in chapter 16, 4 and 5, about the same root for Isaac and laughter and then Sarah's laughter and all that's a play on these words. The rabbis quote several verses to show this word mocking, which literally means playing, can be used in a negative sense. And they quote Exodus 32:6, 2 Samuel 2:14, and Proverbs 26:19 to see the negative connotations of this word. Now it says, drive out the maid and her son. Now, this seems very negative to us, and it does seem harsh, but we don't know what Isaac did and what Hagar's attitude continued to be. It is true that from the Nuzi tablets, this was an illegal act, but from even earlier tablets called Lipit Ashtar, we find that you could either let the concubine's son grow up and share the inheritance, or if you gave the son and his true mother freedom, that was also considered to be an official legal payoff. And that seems to be what Sarah is alluding to here. And notice in verse 12 it says, and God says, whatever Sarah does, whatever Sarah tells you, do. Now, one of two things there. God's either saying Sarah's attitude is bad, but what she's saying is true, listen to her, or Sarah is doing the covenant thing. You know, Rebecca does the covenant thing when Isaac kind of gets off track a little later. Maybe Sarah is the one that's really sticking with the covenant and God's promises here, based on God speaking to her in chapter 18. So let's don't impugn Sarah's motives or Rebecca's motives without knowing more. Okay? When we get to heaven, we can ask them. They may have been just tacky old women, or they may have been the ones that had the great faith. I don't know. Now, notice we're in verse 13 where it mentions, because he is your descendant. This is the prophecy about Ishmael. Ishmael is going to be a great nation. God's going to bless him simply because he's related to Abraham. Now, that's true of what God's going to do for Lot back in 1929. That's true of what he's going to do to Ishmael. You might want to see the original prophecy in chapter 16, verses 11 and 12. Now, in verse 14 and following has caused some trouble among the commentators, particularly the rabbinical commentators, for this reason. Notice that Abraham's going to give water and bread. Why didn't give money? Why didn't give a camel a ride? We just don't know. It may have been part of the legal stipulations. We're just not sure, but we know he loved her and loved the boy and tried to help him, putting them on her shoulder. Now, the Septuagint and the Syriac so translates this that it's like they also put Isaac on her back, implying Isaac is an infant. But we know from the context that Isaac is a teenager. It's impossible for this woman to carry Isaac. And so the rabbis kind of retranslate this some ways. I was tickled at Rashi quoted one rabbinical source that says, Sarah put the evil eye on him and he couldn't walk. And that's why Hagar had to carry him. These rabbis get tough, don't they? I think that's pretty fanciful. Now, we mentioned that she wandered in the area of Beersheba. Now, that's mentioned in chapter 31 again, where we get the idea of the name being the Well of Seven or the Well of Oath. And we're going to see that here in verse 31, excuse me, not chapter 31. Now, Beersheba is in the Negev. It's the last city kind of at the bottom of the Promised Land. So, later on, from Dan to Beersheba is a metaphor for the whole Promised Land. So, it's a far south. The last major well, unless you go to Kadesh Barnea, was about 50 miles further south. Now, so she's wandering around. She lost her way, apparently. She lifted up her voice and wept, kind of like chapter 16, verses 6 and following. And the angel of the Lord heard her and calls out from heaven to her, what is the matter with you, Hagar? Do not fear, for God has heard the voice of the lad. Now, it doesn't hear the rabbis retranslate this because they say only the text only says that Hagar cried. Well, we don't know. This is kind of a condensed thing. We don't know all that's happening here. It's the weeping of the boy who's sick and under a tree about two bow shots away. And Hagar's crying. Boy, it's desperate. They're about to die. But the angel says, Hagar, don't you remember I promised you that I'm going to take care of you? Don't you remember I promised you this boy is going to be a great nation? Don't you know I'm going to provide for you? Now, cool it. I know it looks desperate, but I'm here. God's care for Abimelech, God's care for Hagar, shows God's care for all of us, even though we're not in the a special family of Abraham. God cares for people, friends. Don't you know that? God cares for you. If you know Jesus Christ, you are in the special covenant. But even those who are on the periphery, God deals and cares about them. God cares about His creation. Well, I think it's significant we hear that. Now, let's see. Let's go down to verse 21 where it says, his mother took a wife for him in the land of Egypt. Of course she did. She's from Egypt. It was the response of the father to do that. But apparently this shows a permanent separation. Abraham never saw Ishmael again or Hagar. And so the inheritance is secure for Isaac. That's what Sarah was concerned about. Now in verse 22 we have Abimelech and Phicol. It's interesting, these very same names are mentioned in Genesis 26:26 in connection with Isaac and the problem over this very same well. Now we know Abimelech is a name for all the kings of the Philistines, so maybe Phicol is a name for all the commanders. I don't know. Or these guys lived a long time and also dealt with Isaac. I'm not sure which. It really is. We learned that in verse 25 there have been problems over this well before. Now, Abraham says he dug the well, but the herdsmen of Abimelech say, no, we dug the well. And so there's a fight there. And when the covenant is made, by the way it says, Abraham is saying, God is with you in all that you do. That's the recognition of this Philistine king. This very same thing he says about Isaac in chapter 26:28. Now, in verse 25 it says, Abraham wanted to connect, agree to the covenant, but there was this problem over this well. So he brings it up. And Abimelech says, I wish you had told me earlier, Abraham. I didn't know this. Nobody had shared this with me. Of course we'll make it right with you. Of course this is your well. And so they do a covenant down here in verse 27. Now apparently the animals of verse 27 are cut in half. That's the way you cut a covenant. It was just the way they did it in that day. We saw it earlier with when God was dealing with Abraham back in chapter 15. And so these animals are killed. Well, what about the animals of verse 28, these seven ewes? Well, it's something here of an extra bonus that Abraham gives to kind of purchase or secure this well at Beersheba. Now, Beersheba seems to be the well of seven. But there's kind of a, most of these names are not specific etymologies, but popular etymologies. And there are two possible etymologies given for the name of the town Beersheba. The one here seems to be the well of seven, but look at verse 31. He took an oath. Now the other thing, in chapter 26:33, it's called the city Beersheba, is connected with a little phrase, the well of the oath. So it can be the well of the seven, or the well of the oath, or both, and refer to the same place, and that's what it seems to be. Now in verse 32, it mentions that Abimelech is the king of the Philistines. Now many folks have just got all been out of shape saying, well, the Philistines weren't there yet, that shows the Bible's not historic. Wait a minute. The Philistines were kind of mercenaries in the Aegean area. They seem to have tried to invade Egypt sometime in the 12th century B.C. and failed and settled in large numbers in the place we know them in southwestern Palestine, became the five cities of the Philistines and caused Israel the miseries later on. But we don't know how early some of these mercenaries or traders had already established some residence on the Palestinian coast. And I don't think we can say a whole lot till we just know more. Now notice it says that he plants a tree, a tamarisk tree. This may have had some kind of connotation. I don't think it's Abraham worshiping local deities. It's like a small cypress tree. They live a long time. They're evergreen. And maybe it's a sign of this everlasting God. This is El Olam. Olam is a word that originally means hidden. It means the hidden past and the hidden future. The God of everlasting hiddenness is what it may be. But you know, God's called by several names for El, not only Elohim, but he's called El Shaddai, he's called El Elon, he's called El Roah, he's called El Bethel through here. So El's the common name for God, and these names they apply to it describes God's character. Throughout the early part of Genesis, God's character is connected to how God acts. And new names for God are always put together to show the character and nature of God that called Abraham out of Ur of the Chaldees, promised him a special son, kept that faithfulness through generations, will ultimately result in the Messiah. And that's what Paul picks up on, both in Romans and in Galatians. Well, this has been an interesting study. I've enjoyed being with you. I'll see you again, same time, same place, next week. God bless you.